Thank you, John Guy, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Monday, November 9th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
A prayer meeting is held today in Africa Unity Square for missing political activist Itai Dzamara, marking 8 months of his disappearance.
About 17 members of the Tsvangirai MDC to appear in court tomorrow, charged with a disorderly conduct following violent clashes with ZANU-PF supporters in Harare South yesterday.
What we are witnessing here is a situation of a regime, the ZANU-PF regime, that is obviously in panic mode.
And we take a close look at who First Lady Grace Mugabe is as we roll out a week-long series looking at her life and political career.
These and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
More than 60 people attended a prayer meeting today at Africa Unity Square for political activist Itai Dzamara, who was abducted by unknown assailants exactly 8 months ago. Charles Nyoni, a member of Dzamara's Occupy Africa Unity Square movement, which is urging President Robert Mugabe to step down for allegedly failing to run Zimbabwe, says the people that attended the prayer meeting expressed the concern over lack of police action on his abduction. Nyoni says they want the police, Central Intelligence Organization, and other security agents to abide by a High Court order compelling them to make regular public reports on searching the activist. Nyoni tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube they will take the matter to court Wednesday to seek charges of contempt of court against the state security agents.
We had a short mini prayer meeting with people from all walks of life and people from different churches gathering between the lunch hour to just pray to God and to remember in time in solidarity with his family.
Now, we remember that at one stage you were trying to engage the office of the president. What happened?
We did try at some time point break to engage the office of the president, and we have written several numerous letters and petitions, but nothing has come out from that. So right now we have engaged again for the third time the lawyers for human rights, that they should now revisit the court of law and let the High Court intervene once again so that the state would react accordingly.
When are they filing the papers and what exactly are they looking at here now?
Now what we are looking at is the police. Ever since they were ordered during that case that the lawyers won, they were ordered to give a periodic report after every 2 weeks to show what exactly they are doing and what exactly they have so far gathered. But ever since that time, nothing has come to light and nothing they have said anything. So now we are asking the court again to reissue another order, and this time maybe charge the police with contempt of court.
That was Charles Nyoni, a member of Occupy Africa Unity Square, speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Harare. Police spokesperson Assistant Commissioner Cherit Charamba was not available for comment as she was said to be attending a meeting. And presidential spokesperson George Charamba was not responding to calls made to his mobile phone.
About 17 members of the Tsvangirai opposition MDC, including Highfield East Member of Parliament Eric Murai, are expected to appear in court tomorrow, charged with disorderly conduct following violent clashes in Harare South yesterday between MDC supporters and the police, allegedly begged by ZANU-PF supporters. Police spokesperson as Senior Assistant Commissioner Charity Charamba says the MDC application to hold a rally in the area was turned down because of clashes that took place last week. But she charged the MDC defied the police order. MDC spokesman Obed Gudu tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the latest arrests are a cause for serious concern.
What we are witnessing here is a situation of a regime, the ZANU-PF regime, that is obviously in panic mode. You realize that exactly a week ago, on the 1st of November, when we were supposed to have a rally at Kazembe Primary School at Wapley Estate in Harare South constituency, a gang of not less than 30 ZANU-PF thugs came in a lorry and they disembarked from the lorry, armed with sticks, machetes. They started indiscriminately beating up our people until such a time that the police had to be called in, had to be to intervene, and the rally had to be called off. This was a rally that has been properly sanctioned by the police in terms of the PROSA. Now, exactly a week afterwards, you have a situation where on Saturday, just a day before the rally is supposed to be held in the same constituency, the police write a letter to us saying that they are not going to give us permission to hold a rally. But look at the timing. We wrote a letter to the police on Monday last week, and they wait the whole week. And on Saturday at about 2 p.m., they then telephone Honorable Eric Murai, the MDC Harare Provincial Chair, to say, Honorable Murai, come over to Mbare Police Station. There's a letter for you. We want to give you a letter. Honorable Murai phones me, says, what should I do? I advise him, drive there and go and get the letter. He goes to Mbare Police Station. He gets the letter. He reads it out to me. The letter is actually written by a certain chief superintendent, Bing Mube, who then is ordering us not to hold the rally.
What reasons was he giving?
The reasons he gave were very nebulous. Firstly, he says because there was violence that happened at the same venue exactly a week ago, we are still investigating.
That was MDC spokesman Obed Gutu speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
Meanwhile, despite alleged intimidation and harassment threats, the MDCT says its rallies in Mashonaland West, President Mugabe's rural home, were successful. Although the MDC admits that the number of people who attended the rallies was small, the party says it is happy it is making inroads in a province once described by First Lady Grace Mugabe as a no-go area.
We spoke to MDCT Mashonaland West spokesman Wilson Makanyaire, who says the people in Zwimba, Mr. Mugabe's rural home, braved threats to attend their meetings.
The rallies were well attended. People defied the ZANU-PF order that they were not supposed to be attended. But like I highlighted before, that in a place known as Mawumbe, villages were over-threatened. And this even happened during our rallies. And people were not even allowed to attend the rallies, even though they were not being allowed, but they came and attended the rallies. A chief known as Dendera in Urumbe even told me before my provincial chairman in Mabunje that you will not allow people to attend the rallies. When we tried to go and beg for him and meet the procedure of meeting the chief, he told us that openly.
So, in other words, are you saying that you managed to break the so-called no-go area status of Zwimba?
We managed to make a breakthrough. We were just a stone throw distance from Gabi's area. Though the CIOs, the security officers tried to threaten, but people came in their numbers and supported our president. We managed.
That was MDCT Mashonaland West spokesman Wilson Makanyaire on the line with Studio 7 from Harare.
The storm of words set off by a false quote originated by a Kenyan news magazine, The Spectator, but fueled by the group Kenyans on Twitter and then the New York Times, that President Robert Mugabe called Kenyans thieves, has died down after the quote turned out to be a hoax. But did Kenyans believe the hoax? Ndimiyake Mwakalele reports.
Not all Kenyans bought into the social media hype last week of President Robert Mugabe reportedly warning Zimbabweans to be on high alert when visiting Kenya because stealing was in their blood and that they even have a degree called Bachelor of Stealing. Kenyan resident Judith Mirungi Machachos says some Kenyans are skeptical about the statement while others believe. On her part, however, she gives President Mugabe the benefit of the doubt.
I think it's a lot of speculation or twisting words around so as to create some kind of conflict. But I don't think Mugabe would actually say something like that.
As it turns out, she is right. The joke fell flat on Kenyans on Twitter and the New York Times, which gave it global legs after The Spectator reported it had made up the quote, which was intended for satire. The Herald quotes presidential spokesperson George Charamba reproaching New York Times reporter Jeffrey Gettleman for not verifying the information before publishing and described him as blunderous, if not an outright racist. The New York Times has since retracted the story, and Gettleman, who says he verified the story, apologized via Twitter, saying, quote, guilty as charged. The Mugabe quote was fake. That Kenyans are heavy on social media, including Twitter, is a widely reported fact. Remarking on the Kenyans on Twitter, Mark Ngungi, a Nairobi resident, says outsiders need to take Twitter less seriously.
We've had wars with Nigeria, even within ourselves, online. Twitter, social media was so. Outsiders might think it's serious, but locally, you just write a tweet and the next minute you're going with your own businesses.
And so it goes with Twitter. Reporting for Studio 7, this is Ndimiake Mwakalyelye in Washington.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metum Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up,
the Health Forum focusing on civil servants and failure to access quality health care.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
A Jordanian police officer gunned down two Americans and a South African before local forces shot the attacker today at a training center outside of Amman. Security sources say the assailant wounded two American trainers and four Jordanians at the Jordanian International Police Training Center.
Myanmar opposition leader Aung San Suu Kyi's political party has won the first seats in what is expected to be a landslide victory in Sunday's parliamentary by-elections.
And candidates running in Uganda's February presidential election officially began their campaigning today, while Human Rights Watch called on the government to ensure a level playing ground for everyone. Uganda's Electoral Commission approved a list of 8 candidates, including President Yoweri Museveni's bid for a 5th term and opposition leader Kizza Besigye's 4th attempt to knock the president from power.
The civil servants in the country are struggling to access quality health care, with the majority now turning to traditional healers as the public service medical aid continues to fail them. A Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe President Agabafira Joe says that the government is deducting medical aid contributions from civil servants, but that's not translating to delivery as members are failing to get medication and quality care.
It is a terrible situation. We have members who are contributing every month, members who have faced it but are showing that deductions for PISMAS have been made every month. But on visiting PISMAS centers, there is hardly anything you can get in terms of medication. You can see, of course, the doctor is there. And the pharmacies, they don't have medication. So members are forced them to buy medication, yet they have contributed money that also involves in also getting medication. So we have a case 21 situation or case 22 situation where members have no money because they contributed, but they are not getting the services. And in trying to find a proper explanation from PISMAS, PISMAS is claiming that government is not remitting the deduction that it is making from members, but at the same time, government is also pointing at the high profile corruption at PISMAS, where top management were paying themselves yes salaries, yes allowances, and not necessarily remitting or paying anything for the services that should be rendered to the members that are contributing. So there is a blame game between the government and FISMAS. But whatever the case is, we are saying in bold, government must put, must ensure that must return to FISMAS as quickly as possible so that the members who are paying hard end case get the services. And we are also highlighting that the culprits who have been draining this mass of the funds, that they must be brought to book and must be behind the bars rather than spending for a month without getting the services. So we really want to try it has taken so long before we can find a proper solution so that members get the proper services, because the health and safety is important for anyone.
From what you are saying, Mr. Joe, it seems that there are no services to talk about at the public service medical aid at this particular point in time. So how are your members surviving health-wise?
Well, our members are facing a critical... You know, these are hard times. Some are selling fish, some are selling cigarettes in order to raise... Some are selling bananas in order to raise my possible funds for us to work. To better for the health service. But you see, in a situation where your members who are paying for their children or also paying for their spouses, it has become so difficult. We now have other people who are resorting to the traditional method of getting the traditional method whereby they are getting assistance from the grandparents and using traditional medicine instead of the modern medicine. It is an unfortunate situation, and we don't expect it in a country like Zimbabwe, where we are now into 35 years to be independent. We don't expect that, and we expect the government to at least establish order and ensure that proper services are given by FISMAS, and the no pressure in terms of the money that are contributed. The money that are contributed are used efficiently and effectively for the benefit of the members who are contributing. Rather than this situation where you pay and you don't get a cent, and then you are getting into credit to find money so that you at least receive medical help or medical assistance in other quarters rather than this month.
Lastly, is there anything that is being done by all the unions who are representing civil servants to make sure that you speak with one voice on such issues?
Yes, I think they have been so, and we are trying to come up with one message from all the unions. We are discussing with unions, teacher unions, and also the other civil servants, so that at least we can speak from the same from the same hymn book and sing the same song. So there is a lot of deliberation and a lot of sharing of information so that we confront FISMAS, we also confront government with one voice. And I'm sure that soon we will be able to reach that where we are singing from the same hymn book and confront the relevant authorities so that we get the process. But you know, in a country like Zimbabwe also, you must also know that the state is not as efficient as possible, and they all these other issues in terms of transparency, in terms of corruption, they also have a corruption. So it may not take as quickly as possible to resolve the situation, but we hope that at the end of the day, we will get the service, and the power that we have, the power that we have, they must never down. A more constructive approach sustainable to regional and ensure that FISMAS is operating efficiently and effectively. We need to encourage government of the corporate governance where the transparency and the digital equity rather than the payment of money by members and there is no service.
That was Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe President Takabafira Joe speaking to Studio 7, Sandra Nyaira from Matswingo.
Rising from being an ordinary telephone operator in the office of the president to become the first lady, some Zimbabweans admire Grace Mugabe, the 50-year-old wife to President Robert Mugabe, likening her to the well-known Cinderella from rags to riches story. There are other Zimbabweans, however, who despise her, claiming her rise from obscurity to fame was out of immorality and claim her conduct since entering the political arena last year is not befitting that of a first lady. Patricia Mdadigwa reports.
Grace Marufu rose to prominence in the late 90s when the media first caught wind of a child born out of wedlock, while Sally, the first wife to the president, was on her deathbed, suffering from a kidney ailment. She officially married President Mugabe in 1996 in a Cinderella type of wedding, making her grand entrance to State House. Just after the marriage, media stories on Grace concentrated on her weakness for shopping, and she quickly was nicknamed Gucci Grace by the international media as she strutted from one designer shop to the other on her visit to the West. Back then, she also restricted herself to domestic affairs, running her orphanage and family business, Kushungo Holdings. Fast track to 2014, some say the first lady is literally running Zimbabwe, traversing the breadth and width of the country, campaigning for ZANU-PF all the government officials in tow, taking instructions from her as they follow her everywhere. Kudakwa Shetsiga tells Studio 7 that December 2014 ushered in a new grace for him than the one he has known since the late 1990s.
That's when you saw the visibility of her entering sort of the landscape of the political landscape of Zimbabwe. She has done a lot in terms of political action and also in terms of demonstrating her political power. That way she has been felt within the party structures. Where she hasn't been felt is in terms of visibility national. People are yet to feel her as the mother of the nation.
While some have accused Grace of being a gold digger and marrying Mr. Mugabe for the benefits associated with the office, Tsiga told Studio 7 that Grace had indeed shown care and protection, especially towards Mr. Mugabe, thereby showing her motherly side.
She looks after her husband. She knows her husband is very vulnerable, advanced age, and needs to be looked after. She's come out strongly against the independent media in terms of how they've portrayed the advanced age of her husband.
Tsiga told Studio 7 that Grace's role as a typist should not be used to stereotype her mother of the nation role.
People rise from anywhere. People rise from, you know, from being a teacher to a president, you know. So that's the husband, you know, President Robert Mugabe, whom we have today. I don't think it would be fair to pinpoint her profession as being a typist. She would have been anywhere. She would have been a housewife.
Teacher Ona Moza concurred and told Studio 7 that any woman, given a choice, would also want to be the country's first lady.
She is a woman and she was approached. She didn't approach the president. She was approached and she did what every woman would have done in the circumstance.
Moza told Studio 7 that Grace Mugabe is a motherly figure, adding her recent rantings have made her unpopular, but says, of course, that is to be expected in politics.
Before she entered politics, she indeed exuded the mother of the nation because she helped a lot look after her old husband, who happens to be the president of Zimbabwe. She stayed at home looking at family business and confining her interests towards the orphanages or charity work.
However, for Yvonne Msarurwa, a 29-year-old Harare resident, said, "My Grace does not portray the image of a mother," adding her public outbursts were embarrassing, even to young people like her.
We as women, we expect a mother to assist all women. In Zimbabwe, politically, let me start politically, we are fighting for 50-50, but she's the one at the top of excluding other women. Like I can say, Mai Mujuru, she's the one who was running the show for Mai Mujuru to be booted out from ZANU-PF. Right now, she's the one who is running ahead, also asking for children to be taken away from school during lessons for her rallies. So I don't think she's good as a mother of the nation.
Mosarurwa told Studio 7 that failure by the first lady to ensure that her husband retires reflects she's not a good mother.
She's just contributing to the downfall of her husband. If she were a wife who was there to protect her husband, I think she was going to give him advice, like to step down from the president since he's old.
Sickness Chikandiwa, A 33-year-old social analyst told Studio 7 that Grace has failed to rise beyond party politics, segregating those that do not belong to ZANU-PF. Chikandiwa added that Grace Mugabe is incomparable to the late Sally.
If you are a mother to the nation, you don't choose kids. When you have kids in your house, you don't choose to say, I love this one, I don't like this one. We are all one when we are under a mother. She is just ranting, shouting at everyone, dressing down everyone. Talk to her, take the child, you sit with the child, you talk to her. What you are doing is not good, you must do like this. Not the way she is doing. That's not what a mother should be.
Despite mixed reactions from Zimbabweans, Grace Mugabe is lately enjoying praise names crafted by faithful ZANU-PF supporters. Some are calling her Queen Mother, Mother of the Nation, Amai, Unifier par excellence, while others, advocating for her to take a bigger role in the country's politics, are urging everyone to follow her through the Munuwese Kuna Amai or Everyone to the Mother of the Nation mantra. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Patricia Mdadigwa.
In sports news, the Castle Lager Premier Soccer League race is becoming more interesting as each game passes. Reporter Michael Kariati tells us why.
With only 3 matches to go, only 2 points separate the leaders after Chicken Inn could only afford a 1-0 draw at relegation candidates Wawa at the weekend. On the same day, their closest rivals FC Platinum came out 2-0 winners over Harare City to leave Chicken Inn on 54 points and FC Platinum on 52 points. Dynamos still remain in third place after a 1-0 draw against bitter rivals Caps United, but the Glamour Boys are out of the league championship race. The entertaining Harare derby was watched by campaigning Zifa presidential candidate Philip Tiangwa, who ironically was in the company of Harare province chairman Owen Chandamale, who is also one of the people in the Zifa council who cast their vote in the crucial election to choose Cuthbert Dube's successor. That aside, Capes United dominated the game when coach Lloyd Tembwe says they were unlucky not to win and collect all the 3 points. Tembwe thinks this is the revival of the green machine of which he played for during its good old days in 1996.
For me, the most important thing is the future. We have control over our future. We don't have control over the past.
Dynamos are on 48 points after the weekend's games. However, Dynamos coach Tondera Inderaya says the battle for the championship is over, adding that they are looking forward to the Easy Call Cup, which kicks off this weekend. The weekend also confirmed the relegation of Dongo Sawmills after their 5-1 thrashing at the ends of Triangle. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Kariati.
Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7's live talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts will lead discussions about missing activist Itai Dzamara and rights abuses in the country.
To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios.
Now to recap today's top stories.
A prayer meeting was held today in Africa Unity Square for missing political activist Itai Dzamara, marking 8 months of his disappearance.
About 17 members of the Tsvangirai MDC to appear in court tomorrow charged with disorderly conduct following violent clashes with ZANU-PF supporters in Harare South yesterday.
That's our broadcast this evening.
Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ntebele. This is Jonga Kandemiri in Washington.
And I'm Chris Gande, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.